This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 364. This episode was pre-recorded. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Get out your notepads. It's Crisis 100. In the beginning, there was the multiverse. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs. You can subscribe via iTunes, where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Like us at facebook.com/sfppn. Follow us on Twitter @sfppn. Check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn. Or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. So we are taping this in advance. In the conclusion of the recent Convergence event, we learned that the Crisis on Infinite Earths event, which is what brought me back to the comic book industry, was retconned from existence, allowing the multiverse to be restored. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to cover the various crises in detail, from the initial crossovers in the Silver Age Justice League all the way to the main event. Now, this is going to take us a few episodes to get through because there's a lot to cover here. I am using the Crisis on Multiple Earths trades that were printed in the early 2000s as a guide. So if you happen to have a copy of those, you can quasi follow along in terms of here are the actual comics I'm referring to. So let's go to class. The comic industry saw a sea change in the mid-50s. There was The Seduction of the Innocent, which is this book that caused Senate hearings to be created on comic books and how they were warping children.
Yes,
and it
terrible.
Ended up with the Comics Code Authority. And the code made it difficult to write superhero comics. For example, Batman couldn't fight gun-toting gangsters because they couldn't have guns. So he fought aliens with space guns.
So space guns were okay?
Yes.
Like, because they were lasers or something and not bullets?
Yep.
That is bizarre.
That's exactly how it was. So the result was that superhero comics failed left and right, and the publishers got into other genres. Westerns, romance, humor, horror, basically anything that wasn't superhero.
But in Westerns, you could have guns?
Yes, you could have guns because that was part of the Western.
And it was historically accurate.
Exactly.
Okay.
Even though gangsters having guns is also historically accurate. So the heroes of the Golden Age disappeared along with the superhero title. In fact, All-Star Comics, which was the home to the Justice Society, was converted into All-Star Western. They literally just renamed the title one issue, and it's like, it's Westerns now, sorry.
So you have been reading all about your favorite Flash or whatever, and suddenly you get a cowboy.
Yep.
Okay.
So this happened at least until the 1960s. DC saw their numbers dropping versus Marvel, who had finally gotten their act together and was putting out, of course, the classic 60s Marvel comics of Spider-Man and Fantastic Four and X-Men and da-da-da-da.
The very angsty teenage Spider-Man.
Right. So superheroes had come back into vogue, but DC wasn't fully convinced. And so they didn't want to actually put their new titles out. So the solution was an anthology series where new characters would get a 3-issue trial run. And if the sales looked good, they would get their own title. The showcase title ushered in the Silver Age for DC, introducing or reintroducing Flash, Green Lantern, Adam Strange, The Atom, Rip Hunter, Challengers of the Unknown, Creeper, Hawk and Dove, and the Phantom Stranger. Just some of the characters. And some of these were reinterpretations of Golden Age heroes. Flash and GL are just two examples of that. So many of these characters had more scientific origins due to the influence of editor Julius Schwartz, who started in business as a sci-fi pulp editor. He worked for like I believe Hugo Gernsback and Amazing Stories and all that. And so he had a lot of names in his Rolodex of sci-fi writers.
So he wanted to take the Flash and give him a scientific origin instead of a mystical origin.
Exactly.
Is that what you're...
That's the idea.
Yeah.
But there were fans who were confused because they said, well, I have Flash comics from the 40s. What happened to Jay Garrick? What's going on here?
But comics were for kids, and all those people who had those old comics should have died. Oh, wait, no.
No, this is only 20 years later.
Yeah, but still, they're reading your grandfather's comics.
Yeah, well.
Okay.
So the crises really start with Flash number 123 in 1961, where Barry Allen is performing at a charity event and suddenly disappears, and he finds himself on outside of town and not recognizing the city that he actually runs into. And we learned Barry at this point is a comic book collector and recognized that it was Keystone City, not his own Central City, based on the old Flash comics he collected. Somehow, he had vibrated himself to a parallel universe where the heroes of his old comics actually existed, and at this point, the multiverse is born. Barry goes to Jay Garrick's home because he's a comics geek and remembers the address.
And boy, he's going to know all about their private lives, isn't he?
Pretty much. He introduces himself to the now retired Golden Age Flash. Actually, Joan Garrick opens the door and, oh, you're Joan, and whatever her maiden name was. Oh, you must have gotten married since.
Oh.
And she's like, who are you and why are you wearing a red suit? So they team up, of course, to fight Golden Age bad guys, Thinker, Fiddler, and Shade, who also conveniently just came out of retirement. Jay returns the favor in Flash 129 in 1962, and a third team-up in Flash 137 in 1963. That one had cameos at the end by the Justice Society of America, and at the end of the issue, the old team decides to get back together, because in that case, Vandal Savage had attacked, and he was actually endangering both Earth, what was now called Earth 1 and Earth 2. So they're like, we really need to get back together to make sure things like this don't happen again.
So at this point, they're all kind of older, though, right?
Right, they're older heroes, but older in terms of they're only 20 years older, because this is the early 60s, and their adventures started in the early 40s.
So would they be like 40 years old?
40-ish, yeah, they're all in their 40s,
okay.
We have to assume at this point. So the fans ate it up, and they demanded more. In the later retcon, we learn why the JSA retired. In the 1950s, the House Un-American Activities Committee, this was the one that was doing all the blacklisting and finding out who the commies were, They demanded that the JSA reveal their secret identities to the government, and the society couldn't do that because it would put their friends and family in danger to do that. So they just disbanded. Hawkman makes this impassioned speech about how we just can't do this, and this is not how America should be. Dr. Fate whisked them all away. They're never seen again, at least for a while. As heroes, they just go back to their secret identities and live their lives. This all happened in Adventure Comics number 466, 1979.
So was this the first time that, because I know Marvel did Civil War, which is kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. So was this the first time that the government was demanding...
This kind of started the whole thing. This is okay. Roy Thomas's concept. Roy Thomas later would basically flesh out a lot of the JSA's continuity. So the fans love seeing two heroes meeting from different worlds, so why not two teams? Gardner Fox, the writer of the original stories of the JSA, had brought his team writing skills to the new JLA, Justice League of America. Fox, Schwartz, and artist Mike Sikovsky brought us Crisis on Earth 1 in Justice League of America number 21, 1963. So we're going to go through this in detail. Chapter 1.
Oh.
So they did these multi-chapter things for these full book issues back when a full book meant 48 pages or more. There's a trouble brewing with the crime champions, Kronos, Felix Faust, and Dr. Alchemy. So the JLA gets together at their secret sanctuary and sit around a table making plans. Green Arrow notes that Snapper Carr has school exams, so he will miss the action. Darn the luck. I always hated Snapper Carr. Snapper Carr was like their mascot. He's the Wendy and
Marvin.
And Marvin,
yeah.
Of the Silver Age JSA. The JLA does what they always do, split into sub-teams, because that always goes well the first time. In fact, pretty much the pattern is it goes terribly the first time. So we have Adam, Aquaman, and Manhunter versus Faust, Batman, Wonder Woman, and GL versus Kronos, Superman, Arrow, and The Flash versus Dr. Alchemy. Meanwhile, on a duplicate Earth, but separated from it because it vibrates at a different speed, get used to that phrase, the Justice Society of America is at their new modern HQ, which looks like a 60s living room. They've been challenged to a fight by the Fiddler, the Wizard, and the Icicle. Just like the JLA story.
Why do they, if they're challenged to a fight, why do they have to accept the challenge?
Because they're good guys. Come on. Dr. Fate handles Robert's rules of order for the JSA and notes that they have conveniently decided to have a rotating group of 7 on each case. Otherwise, this would be an enormous group. There's a lot of people in the JSA over the years. So we see that Starman, Sandman, Wonder Woman, and Dr. Midnight, and the others, all sent congratulatory messages over them getting back together, although they couldn't appear in this issue.
Oh, because they're not one of the chosen 7.
Yeah. So apparently Johnny Thunder is chopped liver because he's and the others. Of course, they break into sub-teams as well. Flash, Adam, and Hawkman versus the Fiddler. GL and Black Canary versus the Wizard. Remember, there is a separate GL and a separate Flash in this Earth 2. Our Man and Dr. Fate versus the Icicle. Chapter 2. Faust is on an aquatic caper. Each of the heroes tries separately to stop him and fail miserably. Faust seems to fade into mist with his booty. Dr. Alchemy steals an armored truck, and same plan from the heroes, same results. Flash, however, seems to dissipate into separate atoms.
Ooh.
Kronos breaks into a bank with a weird airship. Strike 3 for the heroes. The villains reappear in this sphere, also decorated like an episode of Mad Men, that sits between the two Earths to meet their Earth 2 counterparts. They're working together. The Earth 2 heroes and villains perform the same routine. In this case, the Jay Garrick Flash also dissipated. This is getting the speedsters out of the way because they're the only ones that can whip between the worlds. Otherwise, turns out the Fiddler hit a vibration with his fiddle that matched the one Barry Allen hit in Flash 123, allowing the villains of two worlds to meet and go between the worlds. Fiddler gave each of them a portable vibrator, think clean thoughts, chum, that allowed them to escape their foes. That's how they dissipated into mist. They actually just went back to the sphere.
They just vibrated their way out.
Yes. Chapter 3. The villains show off the two flashes in their sphere cells, which vibrate to match them, keeping them trapped, and then conveniently give exposition of their plans to us. Each are unknown to the other world, so they figure they'll switch worlds and enjoy the fruits of their crimes without fear of getting caught.
Now, wait a minute. Going back to the flashes trapped in the spheres.
Yes.
Why can't the flashes just change their vibrations?
It matches whatever vibration they go to.
Oh, okay. So it like echoes their own vibrations. Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it now.
I love throughout all this how the heroes have happy grins throughout. They don't look like villains. They look like just happy people. Hey, this is going to be great. So we find Fiddler, Wizard, and Icicle going on vacation to Earth 1, Miami, Rio, hard to say, but apparently there are casinos involved. Icicle looks like Groucho Marx in a pan hat. Wizard looks like a riverboat captain. So, unfortunately, they quickly get bored because they're like, well, we want to do crimes. We don't just want to hang out.
There is a reason that these people are super criminals. It's not because
obsessed.
They can get whatever they want. It's not
and
a quest
quit.
To get things. It's a quest to be criminals.
Exactly. So they decide to rob the casino, and they go ahead and disguise themselves as the Earth One villains, so that way they don't let the whole masquerade go away, and they can still go back to being who they are and hide, and they figure they can easily beat the JLA. The wizard uses magic to make the villains not only look like their Earth One counterparts, but apparently duplicate their powers. This is not explained very well.
Yeah.
Batman, Wonder Woman, and GL are taken out by Kronos slash Icicle, and I love how Wonder Woman uses Kronos' name when commanding him via the lasso so it doesn't work on Icicle. Hey, Kronos, I want you to stop being bad. And he's like, well, I'm not really Kronos, I'm actually Icicle, so it didn't work on me.
Yes.
Superman and Green Arrow lose to Alchemy slash Wizard, not clear how he actually defeats them. Faust slash Fiddler stops Aquaman, Adam, and the Manhunter. Not clear how Aquaman is somehow defeated by sand.
Because it's dry sand.
The JLA finally teams up against the three bad guys, and they get whisked back to the secret sanctuary. Apparently not much of a secret, because the villains know where it is. Finding themselves imprisoned there by magic. Superman can't use telescopic vision to see out. I don't know how he could, because it would be X-ray vision. It's just allowing you to really see really closely at the wall if you're using telescopic vision.
Maybe it makes it so small you can see through the molecules of the wall.
And Manhunter, who at this point is very much a Superman clone, can't use his Martian vision to see either. So Batman says, let's fight magic with magic. There happens to be a crystal ball there from a previous case, so it's time for a seance. GL suggests they concentrate on Flash, who, as far as they know, is dead and seem to have very little concern about.
Yeah, nobody really likes the Flash anyway.
Barry Allen appears in a vision and provides all the details of the villain's plan. Remember, they were there right when they were telling all the exposition. Supervillain rule one, don't tell the trapped good guy your plans.
Indeed.
Barry Allen also suggests they summon the JSA, even though there are no magic users in the JLA at this point. But they do it anyway. This is the first official meeting of the JLA and JSA, and it's wasted in a half-page panel. This should have been at least a two-page splash panel.
Oh, but back then they didn't do splash panels so much.
Later in the same issue they do.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Fate zaps the JLA to Earth 2 and the JSA to Earth 1 since the magic trapping them apparently doesn't stop them from going to the other Earths. Seems like a bit of a loophole. The two GLs are sent to free the Flashes, and that's the end of that issue, which will be followed up by Crisis on Earth 2, which we're going to talk about next time, because that's at least as long as this, and we're already going pretty long on this episode.
Yeah, this seems to be like, let's just pretend to make things work right or something.
Yeah, things work when they need to work.
Honey, I'm going to summon the JSA to our comic book lounge right now. JSA! JSA! No, okay.
Nope, nothing. Now, you really notice with these large casts that there was very much a rigid house style at DC. The expressions are identical, as are the body types. You could just switch the hair and the costumes. If you look at, say, Superman and Martian Manhunter, Martian Manhunter is Superman, except he's bald and green. Other than that, it's the same exact look of the body and the face.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
At least they've learned something from comics.
So in our next class, we will go to Crisis on Earth 2 and beyond. So sorry, no who's on the cover this week because we are taping in advance. Want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including our From the Pop Culture Bunker video podcast. You can subscribe via iTunes and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn. Call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.